The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
I've been talking about a book recently called The Five, The Untold Lives of the Women Killed by Jack the Ripper. And one of the reasons I loved this book so much was that rather than talk about Jack the Ripper, the almost pantomime villain we've been hearing about down through the years, this book focuses on the five women he killed, some of whom have an Irish angle, but all of whom have a story that has been so well told by Hallie Reubenhold that we said, please come and talk to us, as she has done this morning. Hallie, good morning and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Good morning.
Why did you decide, enough with Jack the Ripper already, let's talk about the five women?
Oh, precisely for that reason. Because Jack the Ripper, I mean, literally forests have been felled in the process of telling his story. There are libraries dedicated to telling the story of Jack the Ripper. And the narrative of Jack the Ripper always starts with the death of the victims. And these women have been reduced just to clues in a big whodunit. And it seemed absurd to me that there had been no full-length biography written about these women ever.
Right, well, let's talk about why that might be. I mean, one of the reasons is because, I suppose, if you're to go to primary source material trying to find anything about them, was it hard to put that together? Because I get the sense that sometimes you had an enormous jigsaw puzzle, maybe 1,000 pieces, but only 880 pieces available to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is it. But it's like, you know, if you think about an archaeologist who is doing a dig somewhere in an ancient site somewhere in Greece, and they pull an urn out of bits and pieces of an urn out of a site, you know, and you may have a handle and you may have a base and you may have bits. But then you can kind of put it together because you know what others just like it that have been pulled out of the earth in a better condition look like. And that's kind of what writing this book has been like. So, yes, we don't have diaries and memoirs that have been left by these women. But what we do have are bits and pieces that can tell us where they were at certain times of their lives. And we can layer that over with the experiences of other people who were there at that time, who experienced the same thing. So we'll have an idea, for example, we might not have the voice of Catherine Eddowes at Great Yarmouth Workhouse in the 1860s, but we do have the voices of other people who were there at that time having that same experience, giving birth to a child.
So you can piece it together almost asymmetrically.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to say, for example, you know, if you look at, the censuses, and the censuses are marvelous ways of, you know, really accessing, you know, a snapshot of life at a particular place for a particular family at a particular time. You know, if you look at that, and that, you know, it's got rich information in it. It's not only telling you who these people were, you know, who lived in a house, what they did, how old they were, where they were born, you know, even if they had disabilities, you know, all sorts of things. It tells you who their neighbours were and what they did. It gives you a sense of what the area looked like, what the house looked like. And you know, from that you can create a much bigger picture. And you can even think about it today. You know, if we were to take, you know, a little bit of information about you, about where you are at any given time, and then study the whole environment around you, we can get a pretty accurate picture of where you were and what you were doing at that time.
So tell me this, why for 130 years until, actually I'm not going to lie to you, until I read your book, why did I always think Jack the Ripper killed prostitutes, sex workers?
Because everyone did.
Yeah.
That's part of the mythology. That's, you know, honestly, if you vox pop anybody on the street and you ask them, you know, like, tell me one thing about Jack the Ripper, and what they'll say is Jack the Ripper killed prostitutes. And that's the one thing that is actually categorically wrong. It's categorically wrong.
But did you go into the book knowing that, or did you go into the book discovering that?
I went into the book totally discovering that.
Really?
In fact, I set out to write a book about 19th century sex work.
Seriously. Yeah.
And I think, you know, this is one of the things that annoys me so much because my detractors, and I'm sure we'll get on to who they are, have been saying, oh, well, she came to this with an agenda. She's got a very clear, you know, feminist agenda, and she wanted to change these women so they weren't sex workers, and, you know, they seemed much more redeemable. Well, no, that wasn't the case at all. In fact, I set out to write a book about Victorian sex work. And I thought, well, who are the most famous sex workers in the 19th century? Oh, well, that'll be the, you know, victims of Jack the Ripper. And lo and behold, when I look at the evidence and what we call evidence, you know, it just wasn't there. It just wasn't there, with the exception of Mary Jane Kelly, who is the last victim, who left a very clear trail of evidence that she was engaged in the sex trade, and also Elizabeth Stride, who also left documents that attest to the fact that when she lived in Sweden, she was involved in prostitution, and also, again, for a short time, she appears in the police records in London as well as a woman soliciting on the street.
Yeah, I love what you do in the book, where you each chapter is a victim's name. It's quite stark and definitive, and you know what you're getting, rather than conflating all the stories. So I think that gives it a certain clarity. And yet there is a strain of connectivity between them all. There's alcoholism, there's domestic abuse, there's homelessness, there's sorrow. There's a terrible sort of sadness to it all, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I think writing the book, I mean, it took me to a very dark place, as you can imagine. And it was there were times when I had to walk away from it for various reasons. You know, I got very angry at times. I got very depressed.
About what?
About how these women's lives, you know, that was no safety net. The safety nets that were there were punitive, you know, like the workhouses, there wasn't a way for them to get out of where they were, because society was structured in such a way that poor women didn't have opportunities, or they were very, very limited. So if you took a false step, you know, that was it. You fell all the way to the bottom.
I mean, and even we talk about homelessness and homeless figures in this country a lot. I'm not sure if it's the same in the UK, but when you talked about, you know, 70,000 people roaming London with nowhere to sleep at night. But by the time Jack the Ripper is on stalking the streets in 1888, you're looking at up to 600 people in Trafalgar Square alone. What an image.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's incredible. And that doesn't even take into account, you know, how many people were sleeping rough in Hyde Park, on the embankment, and also in all the little corners all over London, you know, in the little alleyways and the doorways, all over.
Why do you think, just to return briefly to the idea of being labelled prostitutes or sex workers, why did that story persist for the five?
Because it suited the narrative. Because it was about, I mean, you know, and it's still about, I hate to say it, bad women deserve to be punished. You know, and if you contravene the feminine norm, so if you are, in the 19th century at least, you know, if you are not doing what a woman is supposed to be doing, and a woman, there is, you know, basically a very, very defined role for a woman, and that is a woman is a mother, a woman is a wife, a woman is a daughter, a woman is a caretaker. She has a place in another man's home. And if she is not living her life to that outline, then there is something wrong with her. She is defective. She is broken. She is an immoral woman. And the Victorians conflated the idea of the broken woman, so the woman who for whom life has gone catastrophically wrong, whether that's through addiction issues, whether that's because she's you know, split up with her husband's died, something's happened. And the fallen woman, who is a woman who was sexually compromised, the Victorian mind conflated those two because, you know, that woman is morally defective, and that applies to every aspect of her character. She's a bad woman.
And the five women we're talking about, Mary Ann, Polly Nichols, Annie Chapman, Catherine Eddowes, Elizabeth Stride and Mary Jane Kelly, brutally murdered in the year 1888 in just 9 weeks. I mean, that's a horrible scenario, to say the least. But of with the five people, there's I know that there's Irishness in some of them. They have of Irish extraction, which wouldn't be uncommon for all the people who left this country to live in the UK. What about their stories, Hallie, did you find most startling or revealing?
Oh, gosh, basically everything I thought I knew about them was wrong. First of all, you know, as you point out that this is a much bigger story than just an East End London story.
Yeah.
The East End was where they were killed. This is not an East End story. The story of their lives, first of all, it's pan-London, but it's also, it stretches into other corners. It's Wales, it's Ireland, it's Sweden, it's other parts of the UK, it's Windsor, it's Wolverhampton. And you know, these people had a range of experiences. They were the poor working classes, but their lives were not as we imagined them necessarily to have been. And each five of these women had a very distinct and different experience in life. For example, you know, kind of Annie Chapman. I didn't know that Annie Chapman's family had kind of moved up into the lower middle classes. Mm. And her father had been a trooper in the Second Life Guard, very prestigious regiment. She had married, then he became a gentleman's valet. And then she had married a gentleman's coachman, and she had lived on a country estate just right near Windsor Castle. You know, that was surprising. Elizabeth Stride came from Sweden. She was a Swedish immigrant. You know, that was incredibly surprising. It was surprising to me that these women, four of the five women, were killed in their 40s. They were not young women. And even Mary Jane Kelly was about 25 when she was killed. You know, we have this Hollywoodized notion of what these women were like, what they look like. You know, this sort of young, sexy things in low-cut bodices wearing rouge, sauntering under gaslights. And, you know, this wasn't the reality at all. This was not who these women were.
And briefly then, on Jack the Ripper, Hallie, as a phenomenon, forgive the word, but I couldn't think of anything better right now. But do you feel that he has been in some ways glamorized or has been treated peculiarly by time and history?
Oh, he's been totally glamorized. You know, I mean, it's absurd how glamorized he's become. But not only has he become glamorized, I mean, his victims are, you know, it's hard for people to even conceive that the victims were real people. And, you know, we joke about this. In London, you know, people come to this city from all over the world. From all over the world, they come to the East End to go on these Jack the Ripper tours. And I, you know, I realized at some point, this is like, these five women are being killed over and over again every single day. Every single day, somebody is standing on the streets multiple times a day describing how these women's bodies were ripped open, how their organs were ripped out, and with very, very little context and very little feeling for, you know, the fact that these were real people. And so what they talk about is, oh, Jack the Ripper, he's so clever and nobody caught him, and you know, the way he killed and the skill. You know, there are businesses named after Jack the Ripper. There is a Jack the Clipper barbershop. There is a Jack the Chipper fish and chippy shop. There's Jack the Ripper merchandise, there's Jack the Ripper video games, you know, there's Jack the Ripper this and Jack the Ripper that, and Jack the Ripper cushions and pencils and, you know, crikey.
Yeah.
Really? You know?
Who are the Ripperologists, Hallie?
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
I've never heard of them.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, I mean, it's the funny thing is often when I say the word Ripperologist to people who've never heard of Ripperologists, the first thing that happens is people start laughing. Oh, my God, there are Ripperologists. Ripperologists are people who have, for the most part, dedicated their lives when they're not at work or doing other things to trying to figure out who Jack the Ripper was, or, you know, really kind of immersing themselves in that world and studying that world in great detail. And they don't like me very much.
And what would their chief point of irritation be when it comes to you?
Oh, everything.
Well, like, well, why do you annoy them so much?
Well, the reality is, okay, so when they found out that this book was coming out, they started trolling me 8 months before the book came out. Okay,
they're hardcore.
Yeah. And what they didn't like in the first instance, what they objected to was the blurb on the book cover that was, you know, saying that this is, you know, the first full-length biography of the women who were killed by Jack the Ripper. And you know, that there isn't another book that deals with all five of them together that is a full-length book that explores their lives. And so they started saying, well, you're a liar, and then they basically didn't like what I was saying, and they were saying that, you know, I was lying about things, that I was hiding the truth, that I was ignoring evidence, that I was redacting documents.
I didn't realize people were so proprietorial, or that there was a group that could be so proprietorial.
Yeah, proprietorial is the word. There's a sense of ownership over these victims and their stories. And they feel, you know, it's almost cult-like, Ripperology. It's like they feel they are the keepers of the flame. They know the truth. Only they know the truth because they've been reading the same documents for 20 years.
Over and over again.
It's absolutely absurd. Mm. It's absurd. And you would think that they would have welcomed this. There have also been criticisms that, I came at this with, dare I say, a feminist agenda. You know, God forbid, a feminist agenda. You know, that I wanted to restore these victims to respectability. So by doing, you know, I had to sweep under the carpet the fact that they actually were prostitutes, which is completely untrue. There just isn't the evidence there to suggest that they were. It just doesn't exist.
Right. And as a man who simply loves history, I thought it was an utterly engaging, absorbing story. I wasn't seeking out hashtags or agendas anywhere. You'd be glad to know. I just thought it was a bloody good read. And of course, there's talk of a television adaptation, which would make sense, because most film and television adaptations of the Ripper story are, as you previously described, in other words, kind of cliched.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we are working on developing this right now with the BBC. But, you know, who knows with television, you know, things, there are lots of hurdles to jump before it actually comes to pass. So who knows what will happen, but I would absolutely love to see it on the screen.
I loved your book so much that I'm going to ask you about your next project. Have you got one on the
Sure.
go? And can you tell us a bit about it?
Well, yes. I'm actually going to stay in true crime.
Good.
My next book is about the Crippen murder of 1910.
Oh, interesting. Yes,
and you know what? There's a very strong Irish element in that, because one of the things I'm looking at is Dr. Crippen's first wife. Well, he killed his second wife, Belle Elmore. Dr. Crippen was an American. His wife was an American. He was a quack doctor. She was a music hall performer. And they moved to London, and he killed Belle Elmore and ran off with his secretary and tried to escape to Canada. And he was caught and brought back, and he was put on trial and executed. I'm going to look at the women's lives, but I'm going to look at a lot of aspects of this story that really isn't examined, and also our interest in true crime. But one of the things I'm going to look at is his first wife, yeah. Charlotte Bell, was from County Leash. She was an Irish immigrant to America, and she became a nurse, and her whole family went to New York. And so I'm going to be looking at her family
amazing,
as well.
Amazing. And who needs fiction when you have such a wealth of story in the past? But we were only talking yesterday to a lady who'd been to the public library in New York and found all these documents of famine emigrants who'd joined a bank, and the detail you can get from the documents show you.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, so you're talking about Mrs. Bell from Leash in Ireland. I mean, in the early 20th century. That's only a generation and a bit ago, two generations. So, you know, it's very much living history in some ways.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And what I actually really hope to do is to be able to track down some descendants of Charlotte Bell's family, if they are still
easy.
In Ireland.
Easy, Hallie. That's an easy one. Listening to this programme, they'll be on. We'll pass on the details. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and maybe when the Crippen book is out, come and see us, and we'll talk again. But thank you so much for your time.
To.
Yeah, I enjoyed our chat today.
You're very welcome.
Hallie Reubenhold joining us there with The Five, The Untold Lives of the Women Killed by Jack the Ripper. I spoke about it quite a bit last summer. It's one of my favourite history books of the last 12 months. And there's a beautiful hardback version of it, which I have, and it's widely available still. But the paperback is not long out, so well worth a purchase. You'll enjoy that no end. The text number this morning, 51551.